RadioInfluence.com.
He heard it.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he scores the top. Whoa. Here comes a mention. And it's all over. It's all over. First round knockout.
Big
is how Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome in to the MMA Report podcast right here on RadioInfluence.com. Of course, I am Jason Floyd, and just here in a matter of moments, I'll be joined by Daniel Galvan as we are going to recap what happened last Saturday night in Winnipeg at UFC on Fox 26. Plus, we're going to talk a little bit about the regional side of MMA, some things that happened last week on the regional scene of MMA, plus get into some of the latest MMA news and notes. Plus, later on in the podcast, I'll have interviews with two fighters who will be fighting next weekend at UFC 219, Rick Glenn and Marvin Vettori. Also, I will chat with Brandon Gertz, who's coming off a win earlier this month at Bellator 190. But Daniel, how's it going, man?
Jason, the force is with me. I saw the Star Wars movie, The Last Jedi, and I just want to say nothing about the movie. I am officially out on Colby Covington because that mother trucker, that Australian international crime criminal, because I feel like that was a two parts of that boomerang crime, you know, he started it. That guy spoiled Star Wars on Twitter. I'm out. I'm out on Mr. I try really hard to get people to dislike me. Colby, learn to get a takedown, because guess what, Covington? We have a new welterweight title challenger, and his name is Rafael Dos Anjos.
Man, what a great fight that was. I can tell you, I'm not a Star Wars guy. Just never got into it. I did see the tweet. I mean, of course, I saw how much he ruffled the feathers of people. I know you're a pro wrestling guy, Daniel Cormier, ruffling the feathers of pro wrestling fans and wrestlers.
That made me so angry, Daniel.
No. Yeah. You know why? That is genius by Daniel Cormier.
How's that genius?
He's got a fight in less than a month live on pay-per-view. He might get some people who might fork over $60 or walk to a bar on January 20th and watch him fight because they want to see him lose.
Volkan Ozdemir should just be team pro wrestling. I'm fighting for the pro wrestling fans, you know, when I'm not fighting outside of the octagon and threatening my ability to fight. That's when I'm fighting for the pro wrestling fans. But yeah, Daniel Cormier, King Troll, making fun of some of the best pro wrestlers in the world, and Colby Covington calling us nerds for caring about Star Wars. Man, Colby, whatever. I'm team John Jones.
Hey, Colby knows how to keep himself in the news, but we are going to start off by talking about what happened last Saturday night in Winnipeg, UFC on Fox 26. My picks on the main card absolutely suck, Daniel. I only got one fight right, and that was Santiago Ponzinibbio, which heading into the third round of that fight, I necessarily didn't feel very good because clearly that fight was tied up at one round apiece there. You know, I went with a little bit of an upset in Misha Serkinov, who, as I'm watching that fight, I thought he was looking great on the feet. I was kind of looking at Glover going, man, is age catching up with Glover? And then all of a sudden the fight goes to the ground, and, well, we all know what happened there. And, you know, it's kind of crazy because I think what it was, you know, before the fight, Glover was talking about a title shot. And in my mind, I'm going, really? Title shot, Glover Teixeira? Then I kind of started looking at it a little deeper, and I'm like, you know what? Yeah, he kind of is in the running.
It really helps a lot of these light heavyweights who have been there and done that, that Daniel Cormier is the current champion, or hypothetically, it could be Volkan Ozdemir, just because you no longer have someone like John Jones who has practically beaten everybody in that division. So that really sets things up, and then the Volkan Ozdemir matchup itself really opens things up business-wise for these light heavyweights, because I would assume this Ozdemir-Cormier fight is going to mean less than the next three or four light heavyweight championship defenses. Whoever are the next challengers, I think, will be more recognizable names than Volkan Ozdemir. So that really helps out Glover. And despite the fact that you could look and he's only 2-2 in his last four, he had a lot of cachet headed into the loss to Gustafsson and Anthony Johnson. And the way he dismantled Misha Cirkunov, as well as kind of past interest in a Cormier-Teixeira fight, really sets things up. I think the moral of the story, Jason, is you have a new champion at light heavyweight that allows you to have fresh matchups. And more importantly, Jason, this is the big moral. The light heavyweight division is still one that is rehabilitated itself. And it's been a long, long, long time. But Glover Teixeira, you know, he ran into issues early, but he was able to identify where he could take Cirkunov down and just really dismantle him. And this was a systematic win for Teixeira, kind of showcasing his well-rounded nature and his ability to go to point B or C if plan A doesn't work.
You know, and I hope there's somebody around Misha that will, you know, get into his head and say, look, he needs to get around a bigger team. You can't be that big fish in a small pond. And, you know, this is a guy that, you know, was considered one of the best prospects 12 months ago at 205 pounds, and now he's just kind of out there.
Yeah, the big thing for Cirkunov is this is a division where you can retool yourself, and you can't have a second life. And it's something that I would expect to happen for Cirkunov to piece together a few wins, obviously depending on matchmaking going forward. He could obviously get screwed with his next fight against a really tough opponent and face another loss. But for Misha Cirkunov, this is a fighter who definitely had a whole lot of steam, but things have certainly cooled off. And this was a performance where, again, you can pinpoint small moments early on where you really like what you see out of Cirkunov. But at the end of the day, if you lose in 2 minutes and 45 seconds, it was a pretty bad night out. I wouldn't expect Cirkunov to turn things around right away, Jason. I do think it's a process. It is something where you're going to have to seek out a different environment. And, you know, sometimes you see guys change camps and it doesn't necessarily work out. But a lot of those times, I think those are guys changing from big camp to big camp. It's rarely have I heard of the situation where a guy goes from his local area or a smaller place to a bigger place and things don't work out. Obviously, the big thing you're giving up entering those environments, Jason, is potentially attention. You aren't the bell at the ball. You're just another fighter. But for Cirkunov at this point, being just another fighter in a camp full of great fighters is probably what he needs to sharpen his tools.
You know, and when you look at this UFC on Fox card, I think there's a couple of major storylines. To me, storyline number one has to be Rafael Dos Anjos. You know, as I'm watching the fight, I thought a great game plan. You know, first off, when you look at the leg kicks, which obviously took its toll on Robbie as the fight went on. I mean, I forget whether it was the end of the third, beginning of the fourth, where it was very clear Robbie just could not. He was not going to be able to, you know, throw a power strike that was ultimately going to potentially in the night. Rafael Dos Anjos, I mean, this is a guy that, you know, obviously has been in the UFC for a decade now. By far, I think his best performance in the octagon. I think he clearly cements himself as the number one contender in the UFC welterweight division, which is kind of crazy. This guy's only 3-0 in the division, but clearly when you look at the path he has taken, I think there's no question I would label him as the number one contender in this division. I mean, I know you can mention, you know, Stephen Thompson, but I think, you know, the UFC wants some fresh meat in there. You got Tyron Woodley, who did have a successful shoulder surgery on Tuesday. We'll see how long of a time frame he is out. Of course, your buddy Colby Covington, you know, went to social media to put himself in that picture as well. But just an unbelievable performance by Rafael Dos Anjos, and for Robbie Lawler, it's going to be very interesting to kind of see, you know, where he goes from here.
Dude, this was a very much, it felt to me like a passing of the torch moment. Had you told me this was playing out on the feet for a lot of the fight, I would have anticipated, man, a late fight of the year contender. But that's not what we got. This was Rafael Dos Anjos really dismantling Lawler. Obviously, he was able to integrate the clinch and at times a couple takedowns, but it was a lot of the kicking that I thought really tore apart Lawler, and I believe he suffered an injury late in the fight. But this was a passing the torch moment, and it was almost like you had one fighter in Robbie Lawler who had a moment late in his career that was like, I'm not effing done. You know, you thought I was done. I'm actually going to show you the best of my career late on, winning the welterweight championship, defending it twice. And for Rafael Dos Anjos, he's almost having a similar moment here. Obviously not as old as Robbie Lawler when Lawler did it himself, although RDA is 33 years old. There was a way of talking about Rafael Dos Anjos coming off of the losses to Ferguson and Eddie Alvarez, especially how definitive the Eddie Alvarez loss was, that maybe we had already witnessed his peak as UFC lightweight champion. No, he's not effing done. With three consecutive wins, you begin to look at his performance against Robbie Lawler. You take into account what Rafael Dos Anjos has done in some of his lightweight highlights, like the finishing Donald Cerrone in such a quick fashion, winning the title over Pettis, beating Nate Diaz, and finishing Benson Henderson. Rafael Dos Anjos has a really great opportunity going forward to actually radically change the way we think of him as a mixed martial arts fighter with his legacy. Because let's say he does theoretically win the welterweight championship, he becomes yet another UFC multi-division champion, defends it a couple times. When we are talking about great UFC fighters, like Rafael Dos Anjos has the chance to really put himself there. There was a point where it did seem a bit dark there, but you begin to re-look at his losses. A loss to Eddie Alvarez and obviously a loss to Tony Ferguson looks better and better each and every day. And Rafael Dos Anjos is almost like going after the third or fourth chapter in his book, and it's not something I expected at all. But clearly, the way he looked, Rafael Dos Anjos is the next title challenger at 170. Unless, of course, George St. Pierre pulls in his Brinks truck. But honestly, dude, here's my suggestion. And we don't want to talk about it for too long because we talk about Conor too much. But Conor and GSP should just have zero titles, and they should just do money fights, the money fight championships, and they can just fight each other and over again. Because I want to see Dos Anjos take on the best welterweight in the world, Tyron Woodley.
Look, I think there's a more than 50% chance we see Conor McGregor versus George St. Pierre in 2018.
That's what I've been saying since Conor last fought or GSP last fought.
You look at, and I was listening to Joe Rogan's podcast the other day, and he was kind of talking about this, you know, kind of, you look at the new ownership of the UFC, and, you know, they're looking for big money fights, you know, and part of that, you know, they're trying to make back their money. And, you know, obviously you've seen the comments from Faraz Ahabi. I can tell you that, you know, I keep hearing March 3rd as a potential date for Conor McGregor's next fight. I don't think time wise that obviously makes sense for George St. Pierre. You know, I would imagine, that's just my gut, I think if they're going to do Conor McGregor as a main event of UFC 222, I think Nate Diaz, does he defend the lightweight title in a unification bout against Tony Ferguson? I mean, those are all possibilities, but...
You know what the big storyline for me was of this card is actually the TV rating. I don't know if you have it in front of you.
I saw it peaked at 3 million viewers.
Which is, you know what, whatever, that's a decent peak. But I saw the overnights was like sub 2 million.
Yeah, yeah.
The average, which that's... I know the similar card last December, Van Zandt Watterson did pretty good, like mid 2.5 million, something like that. So this card doing that sub number, like 1.78 million is what I have here for overnight rating. Really bad.
I think it says, I think you just look at MMA ratings overall, television ratings this year, you've seen a decline. You know, you look at Bellator since their pay-per-view. You've seen the decline. I mean, you've seen a decline in the UFC. I mean, I just think that, you know, well, the days of just putting on MMA cards and getting people to watch, I think, are over. I mean, I think the MMA audience is kind of sitting there saying, you know, we want quality fight cards, not quantity. Not saying UFC on Fox. The main card I thought was a nice little main card. You know, two of the four fights I was all in on. You know, the other two fights, and those being Ricardo Lamas, Josh Emmett, Serkinov, and Teixeira, I wasn't all in on. But yeah, the other two fights, I was all in on. I mean, look, I was thoroughly enjoyed Rafael Dos Anjos and Robbie Lawler. I don't know how. I mean, obviously, I guess if you're just a Robbie Lawler fan, maybe you didn't enjoy the main event. But I just thought, from a sporting aspect, it was a great fight. You know, very clear, you know, dominating win by Rafael Dos Anjos. And you know, Santiago Ponzinibbio and Mike Perry. That's the type of fight that, you know, the UFC wants on there. You know, we were talking before we started recording here on the podcast. You know, with Santiago, you know, I think because of how he beat Conor and how this fight went, I kind of feel like, you know, maybe you temper your enthusiasm a little bit here. But I think it says a lot about Mike Perry. And look, Mike Perry, the person not many people are going to care for. But when you talk about Mike Perry, the fighter, this is a guy that's evolving. And I saw Patrick Wyman write this on Twitter. You want to be fighting Mike Perry now. You don't want to be fighting Mike Perry in 2 years.
Yeah, he's got such great tools with his stand-up. And Ponzinibbio, it's very hard to come off a quick finish like he had over Gunnar Nelson and replicate that type of momentum. He certainly did not, but I will certainly give Ponzinibbio credit for doing really well on the feet with Mike Perry. I mean, this was a lot of close rounds, and you know, Ponzinibbio may have sealed the deal late in the third with the takedown, but Mike Perry certainly stands out as a fighter at welterweight that one would just want to watch. He's that exciting. He's a guy you place on main cards, but two, skill-wise, there's a lot going on there. There's a lot of advancement. But for Ponzinibbio, there is just a lot of things to really, really sink your teeth into. This is a welterweight that, with a little bit of luck, could really have a lot of success with a great run, but he may not need that luck. He is quite talented. And just looking at the main card on paper, this should theoretically be something that appeals to casuals if the UFC infrastructure worked well, because you have in the main event a former lightweight champion versus a former welterweight champion. On the main card, you have a guy in Glover Teixeira who challenged and main evented a pay-per-view. That should have given him some star power. You have a fighter in Ricardo Lamas who contended for a featherweight championship in a co-main event slot against Aldo. And in usually you would assume you have a guy like that that has so much cachet like Ricardo Lamas, he faces an unknown like Josh Emmett, and Emmett performs like he did here, knocking out Ricardo Lamas. Usually that is a situation where a star is made, and unfortunately for Josh Emmett, who is once again just another Team Alpha Male guy, comes out of the woodwork and is a real prominent figure in his weight class. But for Josh Emmett, unfortunately, it doesn't feel like this was a star-making performance for him. It just doesn't feel like it really hit. It didn't really get it didn't really get digested by the sports world. Very few people probably know Josh Emmett, even after this dramatic win on national TV. It was a great performance, but I think that kind of just shows you, you know, there's something going wrong with the mechanism of a UFC Fox card. But Josh Emmett, again, one of the stars of the card.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other storyline of this card is the missing weight. And, of course, Josh Emmett is one of those guys. He's missing weight. I saw a note that he believes it potentially cost him $62,000 missing weight. You know, not getting – I mean, look, if he would have made weight, he clearly would have got a performance of the night bonus with that knockout. And then, of course, the money that he had to give up to Ricardo Lamas for missing weight. And, you know, it was a fight where, you know, Ricardo Lamas, you know, really had nothing to gain with it. We all saw on this card where Tim Elliott, who does make weight, his opponent does not make weight. And, you know, the fight gets canceled. And, you know, it's one of those stories that, you know, really doesn't get talked about a lot. It is a fact of kind of the business side of being a fighter. And, you know, when you do your part, you make weight, but then, you know, your opponent comes in, you know, several pounds overweight. And in that whole situation, in the financial side, of course, Tim Elliott now does have a fight at UFC 219 as Mark De La Rosa has been signed by the promotion to take on Tim Elliott here on short notice. And, you know, I saw a tweet from Mike Dolce where, you know, he kind of, you know, he mentioned, I mean, he wants very severe punishments. You know, one of the things of that always shakes my head when I, you know, I see, you know, fighter misses weight and you hear, you know, hey, the fighter has been, you know, docked percentage amount of their purse. I always hate when I see that the commission walks away with some of that money, because I'm just like, why? I never understood why the commission should profit off a fighter missing weight. I always think that all that money, you know, should go. You know, speaking of that, Michael McDonald, who made his Bellator debut last Friday over in the UK, he missed weight for his fight, and all of the fine was went to his opponent, which was very cool to see. But that's just one of those things when I see a guy miss weight and the commission gets part of that money, I just have never understood that.
Yeah, I mean, a commission shouldn't profit off of it, certainly. If that money goes anywhere, it should go to the opponent. I hate the idea of escalating percentage of fines. Maybe for hardcore repeat offenders, you get extreme with it. But Jesus, man, we aren't talking about athletes who are living in mansions and have Rolls Royce. I'm so poor, I can't even pronounce Rolls Royce. That's how poor I am. But so, that's how poor all the other fighters are, man. These people aren't making crap loads of money, Jason. I mean, to see Mike Dolce suggest that, I would really push back on that, just because you've got to understand the environment. And the environment is these guys are really trying to make weight. Like, they're trying super hard. It sucks when they don't. Their body dies. Their body is dying. And I feel like the solution to curbing things off isn't necessarily financial repercussions, because they already have that. And what's the difference for these guys from 10% to 25% to 40%? is pretty big, but 10% is big enough to where I think that if financials were an incentive, that already would have played a role. So yeah. I don't think that's a solution.
It's like the Tim Elliott, and I totally agree with him. You know, you sit there, why should you take a fight against a guy who's making 10-10 so you're going to get $2,000 to take a fight against a guy who's overweight? I mean, I understand where Tim Elliott is coming. You know, I mean, you look at, and I think as we look back at 2017, I think one of the stories that you look at MMA is guys fighting more at their natural weight class. Rafael Dos Anjos, a perfect example. I mean, think about this. You know, Rafael Dos Anjos, who we talked about, you know, right there for a title match. 2 years ago, he was headlining a Fox card against Donald Cerrone. I was there. He completely destroyed Donald Cerrone. Look, you know, we always like to look back at these fight cards. How about that Fox event? The Fight Pass prelims featured the UFC debut of a little-known heavyweight named Francis Ngannou, who may now be the most scariest heavyweight in the world.
Yeah.
And Kamaru Usman. Yeah. That was the Fight Pass prelims of a Fox card 2 years ago. Of course, that was the event that, you know, RDA successfully defended the lightweight title against Donald Cerrone. And then kind of everything went downhill for RDA after that, where, you know, he's supposed to fight Connor. That doesn't happen. Then he ends up losing lightweight title to Eddie Alvarez. That fight card also had Oscar Overeem getting a TKO win over Junior Dos Santos. Nate Diaz defeating Michael Johnson. You talk about a little role reversal there. You know, it should have been a huge payday in March for Rafael Dos Anjos. It wasn't. Two huge paydays for Nate Diaz. And then also that fight card saw Carolina Kovacevic defeat Ronda Marcos. And the one thing I remember about that fight, Daniel, being in attendance there, is no one in the arena cared.
I feel like Ronda Marcos had red hair in that fight. Could be wrong.
I'm sure she did. But I remember, like, when I think back to being at that fight card, that's like that was one of my biggest takeaways was I was sitting there and I'm like, oh my God, like people are just talking in the audience. Like there's a fight going on and no one cares.
That's insane. I believe it. It's kind of sad, but it's a tough one for how to develop these new divisions is just going to be one of the biggest problems for the UFC, because it's been a while for a lot of these new divisions and there hasn't been a whole lot of stars coming out of them, but there hasn't been a whole lot of stars in any division.
I mean, how often have we had the conversation on this podcast about, you know, what's the next big UFC fight? We kept saying, you know, next Conor fight. Maybe UFC 20 is the next big fight. By the way, I don't know if you realize this.
I think it
is. January 20th is a huge night in combat sports.
Well, the UFC screwed over Bellator.
Well, you also you got Spence is fighting on Showtime.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a huge night in combat sports. You know, I've talked about this. You know, I do marketing work for one of my clients is a sports bar, and we were talking the other day about January 20th and kind of, you know, the game plan with that night. And I said, you know, look, the way we got to market this is, you know, we're going to be your home for combat sports that night. You know, we're going to have the UFC fight, the Bellator fight, and the boxing fight. So, you know, that's the way we're going to market is, hey, you want to watch combat sports and you want to watch all these sports? Come on down, because we're going to have it, you know, on the TVs, because, you know, that's NFL conference title weekend. So both games are on Sunday. Not really a lot else going on in sports, really. I mean, yeah, you have NBA, NHL, you know, college football will already be over. So it's just, I was looking at that and I'm thinking, man, if you're a combat sports fan, that's got to be, you know, obviously if you're sitting at home, it's got to be at least a two TV type of night for you. But man, that's going to be a huge night in combat sports.
Yeah, man. And it's one where maybe they'll get a bit of a push here this weekend as the UFC is doing that Christmas Eve deal
I love that. I think so smart. Because clearly, I mean, it's obviously about promoting Francis Ngannou, but also can that get a little bit of a rub off for Max Holloway and people getting more interested in Max Holloway fighting? I love that. I mean, look, I'll get home Sunday night from Charlotte probably. I'll probably walk my house probably around 8 o'clock. And you know, look, I'll sit on the couch. I'm going to put it on.
Yeah, I think it's a really smart strategy. I don't think the Alex Oliveira fight's going to be on there, which is a bit of a shame, but if it is, bueno, because I mean that was just like literally one of the best fights of the year, him and Medeiros. But I think it's a really smart strategy and it really works well because people can watch that knockout and then get a commercial for a card on the 20th that they can look forward to. So I think it's pretty good, although there'll probably be a lot of promotion for UFC 219, excuse me. I wish it was 119.
That's got to be the thing. It's going to be really interesting to kind of see how the UFC promotes 219. You know, you have, you know, as we're talking, we're, what, 10 days out from this fight card. And so the UFC has plenty of time to promote it. They did a luncheon on Tuesday in L.A. with Khabib and Chris Cyborg. Did find an interesting, saw an article on MMA Junkie where Khabib was asked about his weight, because last week I saw a note on the MMA Reddit about Josh Thompson being on Brandon Shaw's podcast saying that, you know, that Khabib is 30 pounds from making weight, which obviously kind of people said, whoa. And then, of course, Khabib's kind of, you know, tempering that down, but saying, quote, not big. Asking fighters how much they weigh and how old they are is not a good idea. How old are you and how much do you weigh are two questions you can't ask women and fighters. Now, I mean, look, he could have very easily just sat there and said, no, I'm fine. I mean, I saw a video on YouTube where he was speaking in Russian, and it was, you know, translated, which, you know, who knows whether it was translated correctly or not, because, well, I don't speak Russian, so I have no idea. But it was where he had done, I want to say it was either a Facebook Live or an Instagram video, and he had said that, you know, he was 15 pounds or 14 pounds away from weight, which seems about right for a 155-pound fighter 10 days out.
Yeah, I would more believe the higher number reported by a guy who trains them. But
if he misses weight next week,
yeah, and wins,
like, he'll never get the Conor McGregor fight. He'll never get the Conor fight.
Yeah, he probably won't ever get it, though. I think if you're looking at fights for Conor to take, that's like the last one you would want.
I mean, that's from a sporting aspect, a fan aspect. I hope we see that fight at some point. But yeah, I'm with you. I don't think we ever do.
Yeah. And his comments, like, that is just not going to work out well. No one is just going to listen to his comments and be like, you know what? Khabib is right. I shall never ask a fighter or a woman her age or his weight. It's like, no. I mean, the first date, every time I ask a girl how much she weighs, just how I roll, you know, I'm a baller.
Oh, okay. How many black eyes do you have?
Yeah, it doesn't work out well. I would have plenty of
controversy. Newsflash. Never ask a woman how much she weighs.
Just how old she is. You got to ask on Tinder, you know?
No, I'll tell you, this is a true story, Daniel. So when I was working in terrestrial radio in promotions, I was doing a broadcast, and the promotion girl was with us there, and a waiter asked her if she was pregnant.
Oh, no, that's just the worst. That's just, and you just never do that.
And she wasn't.
Yeah. I mean, how does the waiter expect it? If you're a waiter, you got money on the line. Like, you got a tip that is just non-existent anymore.
that was like, oh, man. You just never ask that question.
Yeah, I feel like I'm the type of person that, like, I feel pretty accommodating. So if somebody, like, I just try my best to avoid awkward moments, I would just play along. I'd be like, yes, I'm 3 months pregnant. Like, yeah, I would just do the next day,
getting sitting in my office, and my boss comes in, he goes, hey, last night, did the promotion girl get asked from a waiter at the restaurant if she was pregnant? I go, yep. He goes, okay, I just need you to sign off on that.
Sign off on that. Who's for HR?
Oh, yeah, man.
That's traumatizing. I mean, God.
Never ask a woman how much she weighs. The age thing, I would totally agree with that. But, you know, we'll see. By the way, speaking of UFC 219, John Anik, Joe Rogan, Dominic Cruz calling the fights. Dominic Cruz, to me, one of the best. I tell you what, I think Daniel Cormier does a really great job as well in how he calls fights. I will tell you, speaking of announcers, I actually listened to Tony Romo for the first time on Sunday since I didn't have a game on Sunday. He's good, man. He's good.
Yeah, I hate the people that criticize him, because I feel like they're coming from a place that isn't really, like, they don't really listen to him.
He's different.
Yeah, you know? which is good.
I think that's a great thing. I mean, just let's look at MMA. You know, over the past couple of months, Paul Felder, great addition. Losing Brian Stann was a big blow for the UFC and Fox. Cruz, obviously very good. Cormier, very good. I mean, you know, they've brought in some guys. You know, I would love to see them give some of the female fighters. I would wonder how Misha Tate would do. How would a Julie Kedzie do on a UFC broadcast? You know, I'd love to see the UFC, especially when, you know, if it's a fight card that they have a lot of women's fights, why not have a woman color analyst in there?
I think Misha Tate would be the one to look at. I think she's someone who's explored broadcasting quite a bit. And obviously Julie Kedzie has experience doing Invicta. But I think Misha Tate may have maybe really good. And, you know, I would love the. I think, yes, opening the avenues, you're going to get people who are very different than what you're used to. And that could bring value. I think if I'm power ranking my color guys right now, I would go. Ooh, God, I forgot about Dan Hardy. They got four good ones.
Oh, yeah. Damn.
They got four really good ones. Imagine if they started Brian Stan. They would have a Bears and a Rich. I don't even know how to power rank them.
I just thought of this. Here's our weekly recommendation for UFC Fight Pass.
How about
a weekly roundtable of Daniel Cormier, Paul Felder, Dominic Cruz, and Dan Hardy breaking down fights?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
Now, of course, they all live in different parts of the world, so it's kind of tough.
They all do it in Skype.
I'll Skype it in, guys. We'll Skype you in.
Yeah, man, UFC's done a good job of churning up broadcasters for whatever that's worth. Good question on the Fox card, Jason. You mentioned Francis Ngannou, and you mentioned Kamaru Usman, who on the prelims, I guess on the Fight Pass prelims, they were future champions. Was there anyone on the preliminary card, including FS1, that you thought would be the next Kamaru Usman, the next Francis Ngannou?
True story. I didn't make it to the fight card until the main card started.
You didn't watch the prelims?
Daniel, we were partaking in some beverages.
I see.
And so we made it there. Actually, I think we made it there midway through the FS1 prelims. But, I mean, you look at that card. I mean, Valentina Shevchenko was on that card. She was – I mean
– No. I'm talking about the card we just saw.
Oh, the card we just saw. Oh, you had me a little confused there. Future champions. Oof.
I mean, the answer is probably no, but
I'm interested in how Julian Marquez develops. I mean, I'm not saying UFC champion. I'd be interested in him. Nordine Taleb, it comes out that he's a free agent now. I don't know what really leverage he has. But, you know, he's very quietly put together, back-to-back wins here. And you look at his losses in the UFC, Warley Alves, Santiago Ponzinibbio. I mean, you look, those are especially the Ponzinibbio loss, a very quality loss. I don't know really what the value is for Nordine Taleb going out there. But, I don't know if there's one fighter that I look at and say, oh, that's a future UFC champion.
Yeah, I felt like a lot of the fighters that were winning are just guys who've been around a long time in the promotion, and they just returned to form. I mean, honestly, looking up and down the prelims, thinking about it, there was just one big loser on the prelims that stuck out to me, just in terms of what he used to be. And that's Abel Trujillo. That was a bad loss for him against John McDessie. I mean, going in there and striking with McDessie, a lot of lightweights are not going to look too great. There may just be a big skill disadvantage. But thinking about a lot of the momentum that Trujillo had not too long ago, this was actually a really bad loss for Abel, losing that decision to McDessie. And the same could be said for Eric Silva, man. That could be the loss to Jordan Mean. That could be the loss to get him. That he does get released by the UFC, because I feel like that's been a point of contention throughout Silva's career, like the last 4 or 5 years, is he's on the fringes, and this loss to Mean might just be it.
Oh man, Scott Coker and Rich Chow could resurrect his career.
He could put together a couple highlight reel knockouts. Although, man, Michael McDonald, poor guy, couldn't even get a finish. I think he broke one of his hands. Still,
I think he broke his hand in the first round.
I read the second, but he fought like it was the first. I mean, it was a real bad fight for him.
Like, that's the crazy thing about that Bellator card last Friday night is you have two somewhat notable fighters making their Bellator debuts on that card, being McDonald and Valerio Letourneau, and no one cared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Letourneau looked good.
Like, I would tell you, I was having a conversation with a manager about a week or two ago. And we were just, I was like, if you had a big, I would consider Mike McDonald a big signing. Like, wouldn't you, like, fight hard for him not to be fighting tape delayed?
Yeah, a lot of times for these fighters, I think the biggest opportunity is their first fights in the promotion. I think there's a lot of mystique to these guys making their debuts, and I understand they do well in these international markets, but if you're doing well just because you're doing MMA or you're doing local fighters and they sell tickets, why waste the prime guys in those spots? Surely the contract for McDonald is big enough, and it just feels like a really weird allocation of resources. Oh. I mean, it's one of these places where they like tape delay so much, they might do a card in Canada and run it on tape delay. I won't even understand why.
Look, these, from a live gate aspect, everything I've been told is it's a home run for Bellator. That, you know, they do very well. But I also, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about MMA television viewership and kind of how it's down. And I think from the Bellator aspect, I wonder, is how much has tape delay played into the lack of enthusiasm for Bellator? And maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just kind of the way I view it, but I do feel like there just has not been excitement with Bellator for the past 4 or 5 months. I mean, even the Musasi debut, I didn't feel like there was this huge excitement. I think there's going to be excitement for the heavyweight tournament. I think.
Yeah, I think so too. But it's one where you look at this week in mixed martial arts, Jason, and there was a whole lot going on. And you could make the case that, like, the second, third, fourth most interesting fight cards wasn't Bellator.
Yeah, I mean, there was something, and I teased this on social media, and this is actually, you know, full credit to you. You had mentioned about this of, hey, let's talk a lot about what's going on with regional in May and kind of talk about maybe our regional fight of the week type thing. And I was going through Tapology. I mean, there was a lot of notable fight cards that happened last weekend. You know, you look over, you just going overseas, Vitaly Minnikov defeats Tony Johnson. You know, the Vitaly Minnikov situation is a really weird situation with Bellator. You know, there doesn't seem to be any resolutions coming to that. I mean, and I think, you know, and I don't blame Bellator for sitting there kind of saying, look, you have a contract with us. You know, we expect you to honor that contract. You know, WFC A44, you had Frodo Kosmolaev get a win over Fernando Duarte. Also, Alexander Emelianenko got a win over Virgil Zwicker. You know, Frodo Kosmolaev is a guy that he's most likely never going to be able to fight in the United States again due to being unable to obtain a visa in this country. So he's, you know, probably going to fight overseas. I mean, those were your two international cards. But, Daniel, there was a lot of MMA action Friday and Saturday here in the United States.
Yeah, man, let me even give you one little thing in the international-wise. Bama 33, you had a fighter on the prelims that is a name to watch, Fabian Edwards. He's the brother of Leon Edwards in the UFC. He's 3-0, he's a middleweight, and he finished all three of his opponents. He has a flying knee knockout early on. He got just a sweet little rear naked choke. So Edwards, who's a guy who's probably going to get pushed pretty quickly in Bama towards the middleweight championship, that's the name I would look. The other name I would mention, but domestically, Jason, it was a big, big time. I mean, you had LFA, you had so much more. Titan card as well. I mean, you probably got it down. What happened across America?
I mean, you know, in terms of, you know, when you look at, you know, regional May, maybe regional fire of the week, I think Ricky Simon has to be definitely in the consideration there. Claims the vacant LFA bantamweight title with a decision victory over Chico Camus. That fight card also, Mike Richmond lose a decision to Jeff Peterson. I don't know how many other people besides two of the three judges scoring that fight thought it was a win for Jeff Peterson there. You had Rafion Stouts and Yuri Villafort retain their titles at Victory FC 59. Luis Gomez won the vacant Titan featherweight title at Titan FC 47. Two names that fought at Strikefest 2, which is done by Valor Fights, Nathan Williams and Jonathan Pierce. Two guys to kind of be on the lookout for. You know, not saying their next fight would be, say, in a UFC, but could be in a Bellator. You know, two guys definitely pay attention to there. Keith Lee, the younger brother of Kevin Lee, he got a win at Knockout Promotions 59 over Sean Mack. CFC 69 had three title fights. One of those title fights, a flyweight title fight, Sean Santella, who's 6-1 now in his last seven, got a win over Kevin Gray. Sean's a guy that, you know, at 125 pounds, I would be fairly surprised if his next fight's not in the UFC. You know, I would say that, you know, when you look at 125 pounds, I mean, Jose Torres is another guy you would think next fight's got to be in the UFC with what he's done on the regional scene. Those are, you know, some of the notable names that jumped out to me.
Ooh, I forgot to mention DeMarte Pena. You know, I probably mispronounced his name. He fights in EFC Africa. He's a 135er. He won the main event there, and he's just a guy who's been around, been undefeated, has had quite a lot of boring fights, but Pena's a guy who probably will fight in the UFC sometime. Yeah, man, I think we're probably in agreement. I think if you're going to award a regional fighter of the week, obviously Vitaly Minnikov is a guy to point towards, even though I guess fighting where he did isn't regional. But Ricky Simon, that's the one for me. He won the LFA bantamweight title. He's 11-1. More importantly, though, what stuck out to me, his performance was great because this fight could have been stuck on the UFC card and it would have fit just right in, beating Chico Camus and doing it in a 5-round decision. And not only doing it, it wasn't close. He used his takedowns to bloody him up, used elbows, ground and pound. For Ricky Simon, I mean, it's only theoretically his next fight could be in the UFC, and he's a guy I would point towards as the regional fighter of the week.
You know, I'll say this, and I guess it's kind of a pet peeve of mine. You know, I saw a lot of people saying, oh, you know, Ricky Simon's next fight should be in the UFC. Like, what if Bellator offers him a better offer? Why shouldn't his next fight be in Bellator if they're willing to pay him more money?
Well, you're right. You're right. He should go after the more money. But I think for each fighter, you have that belief you can be the best in the world. And the upside of signing with the UFC is so much greater than signing with Bellator in terms of what you could theoretically make. But if you are like just an agent, you know the likelihood of that happening. And it's probably safer to get whatever's in front of you now. But yeah, some of these guys are going to migrate towards Bellator and have success there. And heck, they can get their Bellator contracts after they end their UFC run. We've seen that often.
I think the other fear with Bellator is because there's so many UFC events, you're worried about your fighter maybe sitting on the sidelines too long. I mean, you know, Roy McDonald's had that complaint.
Yeah.
You know, he's only fought one time, you know, in Bellator. By the way, speaking of Bellator's bantamweight title, Dario Caldwell, the champion, is going to defend the title against Leandro Higo, Bellator 195. That'll be March 2nd. In Thackerville, Oklahoma. By the way, go ahead.
I just wanted to mention this for our pro wrestling thing. You see, Ronda Rousey, this is what I think will happen. In the WWE, they announced they are doing a Women's Royal Rumble, which is like their big event where they have people go in Battle Royal. My guess would be, much like how I feel we're going to see GSP and McGregor, I believe Ronda Rousey is going to be the last entrant in that Royal Rumble, win it, and wrestle at WrestleMania. So that's just your little wrestling MMA thing. I think Ronda Rousey will do that.
I remember, was it like two or three weeks ago? There was a story in USA Today, like it was a done deal. She's going to WWE, and now, like, the latest thing is, oh, she doesn't have a signed deal yet. I mean,
no,
like,
she's doing it, man. She is doing it.
But hasn't been the rumors like she's been in Orlando working at the WWE facilities?
Yeah, no, she's all in. She's certainly doing it. She's transitioned. I mean, I was watching. She goes to, like, independent wrestling shows in California with, like, Shayna Baszler and et cetera. And she's just all in. Like, I don't think Ronda will fight again. I mean, she may, like, in 2 years.
Oh, but, I don't think you ever see her in an MMA cage again.
She may not. But with Brock Lesnar, that really changed my mind on people who are just able to just take a fight on a moment's notice. But, I mean, I think Ronda actually finally found her passion.
But let's be, you know, if you are in the Ronda Rousey camp, do you really want to see her in an MMA fight again?
No. You would want her to... Well, for one, I think she just likes wrestling. Like,
yeah,
she enjoys her job there.
Like, you would... If she was ever going to take an MMA fight again, maybe it's a Miesha Tate fight?
Yeah.
But you're not putting her in there against, like, Amanda Nunes. Unless you just want to see her get absolutely destroyed.
Yeah. You're right. She's probably done. Because if she does fight again, she's going to be pressured to fight one of the best in the world. And these women are getting better literally like at a supersonic pace. I mean, a year from now, the lineup of your champions are going to be insane. Like, your flyweight champion is going to be great. I don't know who it's going to be. Maybe Nico Montoya continues to develop, but I think it's Ioane.
I think it's either Ioane and Jacek or Valentina Shevchenko.
Yeah, or even Kovalkiewicz. That could be the third one. And it may be someone we're not even mentioning. It could be a Jennifer Maya, but whoever it is.
Could it be Claudia Gadelha?
Okay, moral of the story, the bantamweight champion is going to be pretty weak, but Yeah.
Newsflash, everyone at 115 is going to 125.
There's only going to be one women's division. It's going to be 125.
It's going to be Michelle Waterson.
The UFC had an opportunity. It's going to be Michelle Waterson. The UFC had an opportunity to like pick the first women's division and like second to last, the perfect one to pick, 125, was like the second to last women's division they brought in. And you really think about it, it's kind of crazy. Like, obviously, the one left is Adam Waite at 105, which probably won't happen for a couple years. Yeah, but
I don't see it happening.
Well, what I think is going to happen is Invicta's probably going to invest in that division. They're going to build stars, and they do it. But it'll take a while.
Yeah, then they'll take everyone from Invicta. Now, I mentioned earlier about the MMA Reddit website, which I go to all the time. I just think it's a great – it's like it's one-stop destination to find out everything that's going on in MMA, essentially. You know,
it's good stuff.
Sorry to all the MMA websites, but Reddit is a place to go because people just put the links up everywhere. It's just click the link, read it. I did see something last weekend, and I sent it to you, and this was might have been the best thing I read all weekend. And it's one of the heavyweights, Tui Vasa, of course, coming off that win, his nickname Bam Bam. And, on the UFC profiles and biography, they have all these questions, you know, like they ask them, you know, when and why did you start training for fighting? What ranks and titles have you held? The last two questions are favorite grappling technique and favorite striking technique. And the answer is just hilarious, Daniel, as his favorite grappling technique, get up, and favorite striking technique, punch face. This is one of those things of like, whoever was, I wonder if this was something like they send an email, say, hey, answer these questions. Or if these were asked in person, I would love to see the reaction of the person asking the question when they go, so what's your favorite grappling technique? Get up.
What's your favorite thing to do on the feet? Punch face. That is hilarious, dude. I loved it. I loved Tui Vasa. I think that could be a viral video if the UFC was smart enough. And these UFC profiles are great. I went through quite a few, and I picked a couple of things I liked here, Jason. I didn't go through each and every one. I mean, first off, Sage Northcutt, who's your hero? Jesus Christ. Shout out to Jesus. Deanna Bennett, did you go to college? And if so, what degree did you earn? Now, for most of these fighters, the answer is just no. But for her, I went to Utah Valley University, and I am close to graduating 10 years later, which is something I totally get because I am in the same boat as Deanna Bennett. So, and also Utah Valley, a fellow WAC school in the same conference as my school, UTRGV.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a great answer.
Yeah, hell yeah. Shamil Abdurrahimov, Jason, what do you think his job, the heavyweight, was before he started fighting?
I'm guessing since you're asking me this, it's probably not the usual. He was a bouncer in a club.
Yeah.
Man, what would be a job you would not expect an MMA fighter to have? Ooh, man, I don't know. What is it?
He's an economist.
My question would be him is how does an economist become an MMA fighter?
I don't know. How do you do the calculations and decide that? I mean, maybe he just kept on breaking his calculator. He's like,
this is my question. And like, you know, I had Shannon Dobson on the podcast last week. Last week I did an interview with Nathan Williams, and they're both teachers. And I'm sitting there thinking is, if you're a professional fighter and also a teacher, there's got to come a point where there is one parent who is like, I don't know if I want you to teach my kid.
Yeah, imagine the open house where you got the black guy. I remember Cody Gibson, I think, was a substitute teacher, too. And it's crazy how they're able to juggle these
Could
things.
You imagine, but if you got a black guy in training the night before, and the next day is like parent-teacher conference, and it's the first time you're meeting your kids, your students' teacher parents?
I know. And your juxtaposition with every other like teacher who's just so conservative, like dressed and looking so old. And then here you are, a young athlete with a black eye. But here's the one school they could teach at. They asked Georges Danhoe, did you go to college? And if so, what degree did you earn? And he went to the School of Hard Knocks. That's what he wrote down. Because I didn't see this. His favorite grappling technique is the bear hug. But this is the grand finale, Jason. You know, who is the first profile you should have gone to after you heard this?
Taruto.
Absolutely. So here we go. There's a lot here. There's a lot here. Let's see. What was your job before you started fighting? High school student. Great. What does it mean for you to actually, that'll be the last one I do. When and why did you start training for fighting? I started training after graduating high school in order to become popular amongst girls from all over the world.
Okay, they edited that answer. There's no way that... Oh, come on. You think he did not say another answer?
That's true. That's true. He did not say girls. He probably didn't say the word amongst. Do you have any heroes? I'm only interested in myself. And what does it mean for you to fight in the UFC? Again, this is definitely not his words, but a platform to be recognized by women from all over the world.
Yeah, he did not word it that way. No way.
Yeah, that you're right. I should have saw through that. Malarkey.
Come on, man. You know, Taruto, that was an edit answer.
Yeah, that was probably some type of interview where if it was recorded, probably won't be able to have a job tomorrow. Well, but he's probably his agent or whatever filling it out for him. Like, Taruto, what do you, you know, yeah, there's no way that's how he said it. But Taruto, man, staying true to his gimmick, even the UFC, even the UFC polls.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it. You can't, you know, just let Taruto be who he is.
That's just a bad idea in today's media climate, Jason. I just feel
that's a damn good point. That's a damn good point.
There's not room for sexist nuance, which, you know what, I don't disagree with that.
So you're saying Taruto's not going on the Today Show?
Well, there's a pretty low standard for people they allow on the Today Show, obviously.
Like, here's my question. Do you think there's a bet you can make in Vegas on what the next scandal is?
Oh, surely. Surely there is. Probably in the deep dark. I mean, it, to me, that reminds me of, like, the people who do the death pools where they pick which celebrities died. But, yeah, I mean, it was the NFL this past week, and, you know, Vince McMahon filed a copyright or whatever for the XFL again or whatever. But now he can just go. Yeah, now he can just go buy the Carolina Panthers. He wants to do that. But, yeah, man, it's a... We're going to have, like, we're just going to have to learn all the new celebrities we need to go because they're getting picked off one by one. Moral of the story is don't be a monster.
Look, I'm a football junkie. If the XFL came around and it was during, you know, the winter, yeah, I'd watch.
Yeah, like one game a week I would sit down because I feel like they would go really hard with the absurdity.
Like, I'll tell you, you know, look, as much as I love football, I cannot get into arena football.
Yeah, I don't watch it at all.
I just call it the no defense league because essentially that's what it is.
Yeah, well, what I don't understand is how they're not able to afford some of these stars. Like, how is? I mean, I can understand why Colin Kaepernick isn't playing because I feel like he really has figured out what he wants to do in his life. But Johnny Manziel, you're telling me that guy, you can't put him in a uniform? You got so many stars that are made in college who suck in the NFL that you could just put in there.
Didn't I see Johnny Manziel was doing something recently?
He could have been, which is crazy that I didn't see it because, like, he's very much like Conor McGregor. I mean, you look at Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor needs to not be Johnny Manziel because Johnny Manziel was on top of the world, and he surely fell off. And Conor is certainly in that position. These are both characters who anything they said or breathed was national headlines. And for Johnny, for me not to hear that, that speaks to where he is now.
Yeah, I think we're all kind of waiting, you know. Hopefully nothing bad happens with Conor McGregor, but you kind of I feel like we've seen this story and kind of happened before with other athletes.
We saw when Mike Tyson lost to Buster Douglas.
Yeah. I mean, it just, you know, and obviously the UFC needs stars. You know, we're approaching the end of the year. Of course, we have one more podcast before the calendar will turn over to 2018. Next week on the podcast, I do want to talk about New Year's resolutions for MMA, some things that we want to see in 2018, so Daniel, that's giving you a week notice of the get that one ready. I've already started thinking of some ideas.
Jesus, I'm going to do some hardcore prep work here. I need to write this down. My New Year's resolution is to I'm not going to spoil it, but I got a good one too.
No, and, New Year's resolution is to make better picks for myself.
Yeah, same here.
I think I went like 5-6 last week. Yeah, 5-6.
I promise you guys, next year, our picks will be at a higher percentage than this year. Although that may just be like that's just without saying, you know. But, yeah, I feel pretty confident about this next year when it comes to our fighter analysis. This was just a weird year. It was a wonky year.
Yeah, but the year's not over yet. Of course, got the Christmas holidays coming up this weekend. I will be in Charlotte on Christmas Eve. Actually, go there on Saturday, the 23rd, and do a little football on Christmas Eve and get back on Christmas Eve night and watch the replay of UFC 218. You got any big plans for the Christmas holidays?
Man, I really got to figure out what to give my girlfriend for Christmas. So that's coming up. That's probably my biggest concern, Jason, is that. I don't know where to go. If a listener's listening, my first idea is the Buffalo Wild Wings gift card. But if that doesn't work out, I don't know, Jason. But it's going to be pretty basic, man. It's going to be me in my PJs, hanging around the house, watching football, watching sports, getting fat.
I have not done any Christmas shopping.
You definitely should. It is important.
I think that's what I'm doing this week before I head to Charlotte.
Yeah. You better get that out of the way, because you come back without a present, Jason, you will be sleeping outside. That is where we will be doing the podcast.
Well, it is like 80 degrees here in Tampa, so.
That's not too bad. You're right.
At least it's not. Yeah, I think we've had like a couple of days of cold weather, but yeah. I think it's supposed to be a little chilly in Charlotte this week. One thing I will tell you I love about doing the games in Charlotte. One of the things that makes their press box unique is they serve Krispy Kreme donuts.
Wow, that's actually amazing. That is, I hope they're hot, but yeah, man, that environment's going to be weird as hell in Charlotte. I didn't even put two and two together. But you're going to a team without, I mean, the team still has the owner until the season's over, but yeah, maybe they'll add a little more sprinkles to the Krispy Kreme donuts and distract you from the chaos fire above your head.
I like Charlotte's a really easy stadium to work. It's one of my favorite stadiums to work just because it's so easy.
And you go there every year with a...
Yeah, it always helps when you go there every year and you exactly know where everything is at. That is that's definitely a positive. Of course, had Monday Night Football this week. That was fun seeing Coach Gruden because I got the opportunity to be a part of his radio show for 5 seasons. So
did he recognize you?
Yeah, he did.
He recognized you, really.
I guess when you sit in the room with a guy for 5 years, it's kind of hard to forget.
Do you have his phone number?
No, I don't have his phone number.
Oh, man, we should call him.
No.
That's good, man. That's cool that John Gruden would just recognize you in a room.
Yeah. You know, it was fun. You know, good game on Monday night, too. You know, it was a very entertaining game, and NFC South doing some good things, but... we are going to keep this podcast going with the MMA talk as I'm going to play you 3 interviews back to back to back of guys that I've talked to here over the past couple of days. The first 2 interviews you're going to hear are with 2 fighters who will be fighting next Saturday night at UFC 219. First, you're going to hear from Rick Glenn. Then you're going to hear from Marvin Vettori. And then our final interview is going to be with Brandon Gertz. And then I'll come back and I will wrap up this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. But up first in the interview portion is my conversation with Rick Glenn. UFC 219 is going to take place here at the end of the month in Las Vegas. And I'm now joined by one of the men that's going to be part of this fight card. Rick Glenn is going to take on Miles Jury. Rick, as always, man, I appreciate time. Last time we talked was, prior to your last fight where you talked about moving out the Team Alpha Male. So how is that adjustment period going now as opposed to the last time we talked?
Yeah, it's continuing to go great. And I keep learning and developing new tools and sharpening all my stuff. So it's going really good out here.
Anything you miss about the Midwest?
No, I guess not. Not really.
I got to imagine you probably like the California weather a little better.
Oh, yeah. It's super nice out here.
And of course, you're coming up. You're coming off that win, back-to-back wins. As you think about your last fight, how do you assess your own performance?
It was really good. I pushed the pace. I didn't get tired. I didn't take really any damage, so it went really well. I was pretty happy with it.
Yeah, you know, I know it's the first part of that answer you thought about. So was there something about that fight that's something that bugged you about, maybe something that you just weren't able to accomplish what you wanted to accomplish in that fight?
Yeah, of course. You know, you want to get the finish and all that. And I think if I would have finished him, I possibly would have got a performance bonus. They're pretty pleased with my performance. And I have the record for the score. I don't even remember what the score is, but I set a record for the new unified rules for the scoring system.
You know, of course, that was against Gavin Tucker, UFC 215. It's been just over 3 months. So, did you really have any downtime after that fight was over, or was it pretty much just straight back in the camp?
No, I had to take care of a couple things and went back to Iowa, visited some family, and then got back into it.
I've been asking a lot of fighters in the UFC about the Performance Institute, if they've been there or not. Is that something that you have gone to? And if you have, has it opened up your eyes to maybe, about the performance side of the sport and maximizing, getting the most out of your body?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I did go out there at the start of my camp and did an evaluation. They did a ton of tests and everything's, really good. It was kind of a reassurance thing. I'm doing what I need to be doing. There were a couple little tweaks, that I added, but nothing major really. And, it's quite the facility.
Yeah. I was talking to Eric Anders about this, and one of the things that they had told him was basically like, look, you don't need to work out as much as you're working out. There was not necessarily a need for, three workouts a day. You can do two workouts a day and still maximize your performance. Did they offer you any tips along those lines of, hey, by doing this, you're going to maximize your performance?
Just a little timing with some, different diet stuff. I do extraordinary from what they said already, but there are a couple little things that I could adjust to get more, performance out of my body on certain days, the harder days, maybe add some more starchy carbs or little things like that.
I mean, when it comes to nutrition, isn't it just constantly always an education, because there's, so much new information coming out every day?
Yeah, I think it just, everyone's different. You just got to trial and error, figure yourself out and kind of go from there. I don't work at it with a nutritionist. They have really good nutrition at the Performance Institute, and they gave me some input. But for the most part, I got my stuff dialed in pretty good, and they agreed and, tweaked just a few, one thing. But, yeah, I think everyone just needs to kind of figure out what works best for them, honestly.
And your fight coming up here on December 30th, it's against Miles Jury. Of course, Miles coming off that win against Mike De La Torre back in April. Of course, came into the UFC as a 155er, now has dropped down to 145. Assess Miles as an opponent and why you like this matchup for yourself.
Yeah, I like the matchup, for myself. He's lanky, rangy guy like myself. Been around for a while. He's a veteran of the UFC, so it's good to fight someone that's been in the UFC and won and beat a lot of the top guys that he's beaten. It'd be good to face someone like that.
You do have a 3-inch reach advantage in this fight. We always look at the pros of having a reach advantage. Is there any cons when you have a little bit of a reach?
Yeah, I guess I can stick and move a little better.
In terms of Miles, obviously, his fight back in April was his first fight since the end of 2015. Do you see a different fighter, at 145 as opposed to when he was fighting at 155?
It should be a little quicker, I think, being lighter. Besides that, he does a lot of the same tendencies throughout all of his fights. I haven't seen much changes with his game, so I don't expect too much change.
Tendencies is a word we hear a lot in the fighting game. How much of your preparations for a fight is just looking at yourself and trying to figure out if you're showing any tendencies in fights?
Yeah, I always look back and watch my fights and look and see how I beat myself, and not just look at the performance and look how good I'm doing this or that. I look at my imperfections, you know, as well.
Are you your harshest critic?
Yeah, I'd say so for sure. Yeah, definitely.
And of course, the last time we talked with your Move Out the Team Alpha Male, we talked about the King of the Mat competition. Have you, you know, been able to win any of those competitions?
It's been a while since we did one. You know, I'm not getting my ass kicked as much now, but yeah, I've been acclimated to the team, and you know, it's nice. I've cornered a handful of guys already, and did a little bit of traveling with the amateur team and help some of the younger guys out. So it's nice to be giving back as well.
When you're out there cornering a guy, you know, whether it's an amateur or, you know, maybe a pro that maybe only has a couple of fights, what can you learn about the fight game when you're doing that? Do you find yourself ever, you know, realizing something that maybe just was in the back of your head, but you don't necessarily think about all the time?
Yeah, sometimes, you know, with the younger guys, it's kind of remind them to, you know, chill out. You already put in the hard work, you know, now you just got to do all the little steps building up to the fight and everything's going to be fine, you know, and kind of explain to them, yeah, you know, you're going to be nervous. It's all right. Like, you know, you're going in there, kill or be killed. So I guess just understanding the process a little more and, you know, saying it in words to them kind of opens my eyes a little bit more each time I do it, I guess.
As we're talking, we're 2 weeks out from your fight. So what's the next 2 weeks like for you?
Just hang out with the family and, you know, laser focus. I'm zoned in for the fight. Just been training, dialing back right. You know, I got my planner. I've been, you know, I fill my planner out every day, and I had my schedule, you know, already filled out at the beginning of the camp with all my sessions and different things, and you know, I tweak it as we go, and I'm pretty dialed in now, just ready to get it on.
You know, of course, this will be you know, this fight will be you know a couple days after the Christmas holidays. Is it tough to be in fight camp during the holidays for you?
No, you know, I guess most people think about, you know, missing out on eating whatever crap they would normally eat on Christmas. But I don't really care. You know, I eat what I want. We can still make some healthy desserts if I'm craving a dessert or something. But I don't think about eating, you know, pizza or whatever after the fight. You know, none of that's going to matter if the fight doesn't go well. So my main focus is on the fight. Yeah, it's been, you know, as long as I'm with my wife and dogs on Christmas, I'm happy. Might exchange some gifts, get the dogs some gifts, and go off.
Now, what do you consider a healthy dessert?
Like pumpkin pie, or what is there, cashew. Okay. My wife made a pumpkin cheesecake, but it was made out of cashews,
okay,
and like almonds and some other nuts. It was actually all like healthy stuff, no sugar in it, and just natural sweets from fruit, like dates. I guess dates are fruits, so it was like dates and cashews, and she made a pumpkin cheesecake out of, you know, nuts and things like that. So I'm kind of spoiled when it comes to eating healthy desserts if I want, you know, desserts or something.
That does sound good. As a big fan of pumpkin pie, that does sound pretty good here. But we got your fight here December 30th, UFC 219, as Rick will be a part of the preliminary card, takes on Miles Jury. Rick, as always, I appreciate time, and let everyone know they can follow you out on social media, and if you've got any sponsors that have been helping supporting you for this fight camp.
Yeah, I got to thank my one new sponsor, ProTrain, F3.com, meal prep company. Thank you, guys. Combat Corner, Uridium Sports Agency. Check me out on Instagram, Gladiator MMA. Rick, the Gladiator Glenn, official fan page, Facebook. Thanks for having me.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report on Radio Influence, man, steps back into the UFC Octagon here at the end of the month, UFC 219, Marvin Vettori. Marvin, as always, I appreciate the time. Of course, the year-end event is something that you went through last year. As you think about where you were at this point last year to where you are now, what is the major differences?
Really, in a way, that loss kind of like slowed down a little bit my hype, let's put it that way. But it's all right. I'll regain it because I know I'll get to the top. So, and it kind of like, it was a very close fight. But, you know, at the end of the day, a loss, it's always a loss. So it kind of slowed it down, but it gave me more time to even get ready of and get better. So, you know, I think after this fight, we're going to go all everybody on the hype train again. And doesn't matter. I mean, I got another win and I improved a lot. And I mean, my fan base still growed and everything. And a lot of even on my... not just in my MMA career, but in general, the team that is behind me working with me growed a lot. So things got much better anyway, and grown a lot since last year. But at the same time, I feel like in a way, kind of like slowed down the hype that loss. But doesn't matter now. I'm coming up a win, and I want to keep going on this way.
Of course, we talked prior to your last fight in June. You got the decision win there. So, and I know you mentioned in another interview, you really wish you would have had a chance to talk there in the Octagon after the fight was over. Did you have anything planned, you know, or is it just kind of one of those things of just like, you know, hey, it's a solid opportunity and, you know, you feel like you missed out a little bit?
I did have like an idea what I would have said, but I never like planned it. Like I don't have like something written that I just want to go out and like study and say. But I had an idea, and obviously that's a good moment after the fight just to let it all out and say what you think. But yeah, it didn't happen. So, I mean, I just, whatever.
How would you say you have grown as a martial artist from that fight to currently?
Oh, I mean, everywhere, really. I mean, I think my striking got much better. I think I knew how to deal with a very tough opponent that it's hard to put away. My wrestling improved a lot since the last year. Jiu-jitsu, like everything, really. I mean, my fighting IQ got much better. I mean, it's like I said in other interviews, like every fight, win or lose, I always go back and see what I do good and what else there is to improve, and there are always things to improve. And so, I mean, I go back and try to improve every area, really. And then obviously when I have a fight coming out, then I get more specific, but I will always focus on my style and just do something more specific about my next opponent. But like I said, it's a learning process, and I never stop learning and improving.
Taking on Omari Akhmedov here, assess him as a fighter and what you think he does the best.
Double leg. He has a good wrestling, and that's about it, really.
Is kind of your thought process in this that you know that double leg's coming and that you do not expect him to want to have a striking matchup with you?
Nah. I mean, he will exchange a little, and then he's gonna try and take me down for sure. But after a while, he'll realize he will have no breaks, because in defeat, he will be getting busted up and on the ground. If he's able to, because I don't think he'll be able to, but let's say he can put me down, he won't be able to hold me down for more than 10 to 20 seconds. So. And then if he keeps wasting his energy trying, by the end of the first round, he'll be done. But like I said, I want to finish this guy. I don't want to just go to decision. Even though if it happens, it happens, and I'm ready for it, but I want to finish this guy.
Is there a preferred method of finishing the fight? Is it via strikes or is it via submission?
It could be a clean knockout, or it could be a TKO, or I can just rock him and then choke him out some way. So that's what I'm saying. I will rock him for sure, and then I don't know. It could be finished on the with punches, or it could be a submission.
If for the fans, they're going to be tuning in on December 30th. Is it one of those things that your message to the fans is don't blink because this fight can end any second?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, yes.
Yes. You know, of course, this is wrapping up 2017. You'll be heading into 2018. Have you set any personal goals that you want to achieve coming up here in the next calendar year?
By the next – oh, yeah. I mean – I wanna get to I wanna break into top 10 and keep climbing. I'm not here to be a gatekeeper or anything. I wanna get to the top, get my title, and get the belt as soon as possible.
You know, when you talk about getting into the top 10, I mean, have you set a goal of like, hey, I want to be a top 10 fighter by June, July? I mean, is it something along those lines?
I mean,
lines?
After this fight, I wanna rank guy for sure. That's what I want. And then from there, let's keep going. But after this fight, I'll be 3-1 in the UFC. I want a rank guy, and think I deserve it. So,
have you had an opportunity to head out to the Performance Institute in Las Vegas? And if so, what's your thoughts of it?
Oh, I did a few times actually. It's awesome. It's just awesome. You really feel like you've been people take care of you there. You got PT whenever you want. You got a lot of stuff for recovery. Facility is great for training, and you have plenty of space. You have the food. Great.
I know a lot of guys have talked about just sitting down and talk to the nutritionist there, and also how they can run these tests on you to tell you how to maximize your performance. Was there anything they said to you that kind of blew your mind?
I did actually. I forgot about that. Like I actually did all this testing, and the great thing is that you know, you don't have, because you know, there is a lot of coaches that sometimes they're like, oh no, this what you're doing is not good. You gotta do what we tell you and blah blah blah. These guys are just like, they're just great, and in the fact that like, they're good at what they do, and they just help, and they just give you a different point of view, and they're very open minded, and they're very open to work with the coaches that are already following you. So, you know, it was great, and I did some testing, and good thing was I did a VO2 max test twice, and the second time they said that I had the highest score that they've seen since. Like the other guys have done the same, but nobody did it higher, and I was good.
But of course, everyone's going to be able to see your fight here, December 30th, UFC 219. Marvin, I really appreciate time. Any message to the fans who are going to be tuning in on December 30th?
Don't miss UFC 219, my fight against Omari, because it'll be fireworks, and. We're not here just to hang around. We're here to get to the top, so don't miss it.
And where can everybody follow you at on social media?
Marvin Vettori in Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Easy.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man who scored a knockout victory back at Bellator 190 at 1 minute and 57 seconds in the first round. It's Brandon Kurtz. Brandon, as always, appreciate time. Of course, we talked about this fight leading up to it. You talked about going overseas. What's your biggest memory of just, you know, going over to fight overseas and the fight? I mean, is there anything, one memory that really sticks out in your mind?
You know, when you say that, like, the whole thing was an adventure the whole time, and that's how I approached it, an adventure. But a cool thing I did with this one, I had my pops in the corner. You know, he's been to every single one of my fights. I've never had him in the corner, but I had him in the corner. It was just kind of a cool experience. Just like, he's always there, he's always front row, but like looking over, and he was right there, and the appreciation for the fight, it was really cool to see.
Did he say anything to you before or after the fight that really sticks out to you?
You know, I wouldn't say it's exactly what he said. You know, it was just it's his face expressions. You know, it was a different thing having him back there, but I got experience, you know, seeing him. I mean, I know how he is, and, you know, he loves his son, so he's worried, you know, and you can see it a little bit. It wasn't distracting, but then after, when, you know, the knockout and everything, you look over and you just see the pure happiness and everything about it, and the relief, you know, it was a pretty cool thing.
And of course, by now, everyone has seen the knockout. Bellator put it up on the YouTube channel. If anyone did not see the knockout, kind of talk me through it. Is that something, did the fight unfold the way you thought it would go?
Absolutely. I mean, that you envision your fight, you go through it mentally, you need to, I feel like. Obviously, different things can happen, but you play out your role, and that's how I saw it. I saw myself hurting him early. You know, I know my power. And when I'm on, when I got that killer instinct in there, it only takes one, you know. And I felt like I was right when we started with him. I could feel it was going to come.
Did anything he do in the fight surprise you?
You know, not really. You know, he came with me what he thought he was. He was trying to work my lead leg and, you know, try to take me to the ground. And if my opponent's, you know, fought or won is trying to take me to the ground, I feel like I definitely won that fight. You know, out of all my pro fights, I've been taken down once. And that's definitely my takedown defense is something I hold in really high regard. So when I see somebody, you know, that's what they need to do. It's a big confidence booster for me.
Did you walk into this fight, you know, feeling back against the wall type thing because of how the last three fights had gone? And do you kind of feel like there's this a weight or burden off your shoulders with this fight?
You know, I wouldn't necessarily. I felt like my back was against the wall. I would say it felt like a burden was lifted. I definitely had that relief, and that's what a knockout does every time. Once you connect and you feel it, and he drops you. I always feel a sense of, you know, it's over, you know, it's a relief, you know. So every fight's got something. That's why I don't feel like my back was against the wall. I've said it before, you know, every your next fight is always your biggest fight. So I feel like every time you feel like you're kind of, I have my back against the wall, you know, there's something always on the line that was more important than the last one. That's what I feel like. So, no, I felt great out there, and, you know, it happened exactly how I thought in my mind.
You've had some memorable knockouts in Bellator. You know, you think back to the quick knockout you had over Benny back in 2014. I think we all remember the knockout in 37 seconds against Derek. Is this a more memorable knockout, or are they all kind of equal?
You know, I would say the only why this one would be any more memorable than the other ones is just because of the adversity I've come back from, and just traveling to Italy and alone. You know, I've never done anything like that, and it felt kind of like an adventure, kind of, you know, being in Italy, being in Rome. I kind of felt, going back to those days, I was traveling across the world for a war.
Did you do any, you know, did you allow yourself to be a tourist at all while you're over there and kind of check out the country?
A little bit before I was there a little early. I was there like, I think 8 days before the fight. So I checked out the Coliseum. That's always been something I wanted to see. You know, as being a fighter, I absolutely believe we're modern day gladiators. You know, to step in there, and I felt like taking the energy from there was amazing. You know, that, and then I didn't see much of Florence until after the fight, but we stayed a couple of days after too, to take it in. You know, it was kind of hard during, you know, straight fight week to see too much. I like to stay off my feet, but I got to enjoy what I needed to.
And that is the benefit of going overseas there. Did you feel more jet lag going there or coming back?
Oh, man. You know, I feel like they were equal. when I definitely there, it was the sleep and everything was crazy to get used to. And then coming back, it was the same, been the same deal. I'll tell you, I've been waking up quite early.
Now, are you typically an early riser, or are you kind of, you know, you typically get up later in the day?
I'm a morning person, but it changes. And I'm definitely a strong believer that anything before 6 a.m. is not the next day. So I don't feel like you should wake up anytime before then. But about 6 a.m., 7 o'clock is my wake-up time. But it changes sometimes, you know. Before the fight, I was sitting at about an 8 o'clock, sometimes 9.
I mean, right now, are you kind of at that point of just kind of enjoying life, or is your mindset like, hey, Scott, Rich, Mike, if a 55er falls out, I'm ready to go?
Well, you know, given the time period of the year, Christmas is absolutely my favorite by far holiday that I feel like you should celebrate with your family. So being the time of the year, like my mind's not on a fight right now. After Christmas, that'll change really quick. I know how I am, but right now I only want to think about seeing my family. And like I said, Christmas is my all time favorite holiday. So I just love the, you know, ability to get that knockout and enjoy the holidays. And then after that, my mind will definitely be getting back set to fight.
So with Christmas being number one, what's the number two holiday for you?
Number two is definitely birthdays. I mean, I'm not just saying my own birthday. I'm just saying birthdays in general. I like celebrating people's birthdays and my own birthday. I'm also a strong believer birthday is just not another day of the week. I don't believe in that. I believe that the day you were born is very important. So I enjoy celebrating that with my close friends and family.
You know, of course, this gets you right back on track there at 155 pounds. I'm sure you're probably already thinking about the timetable of when your next fight would take place. Is there any names that, that interest you at all?
I wouldn't necessarily say a certain name. I'm looking at the top guys in the division. You know, I've been fighting the top guys for years, and that's the only people I want to fight. You know, I want to be in the top 55er in the division, you know, and that's what I believe I am. We've had some bumps and, you know, bruises down the road, but I ultimately feel like I'm the most powerful 55er on the roster, and I just want to keep fighting the top people.
I don't know if you've started to set goals for 2018 or not. You know, is there anything that you're looking to accomplish in 2018? Obviously, you want to go undefeated and all those type of things, but is there anything in particular maybe have your sights set on?
You know, just continuing improving myself. I mean, I feel like I'm even getting better. I think the big part in me right now, and you can see in my last few fights, is I feel I've been getting better mentally. I mean, my whole life I've worked out hard. I love working out. That's why this sport's easy to me. But the mental part's always been something I've struggled with and tried to work out. And I feel like I've been doing that for the last few years. I felt like the best complete fighter I've ever been. So I feel like I'm still proving that to other people right now. And that's what I want to continue in 2018. And I mean, how this last fight went, that's exactly like I feel like any one of my fights can go just like that. I feel like I have the power to knock out anybody in the division just like that, you know. So I just have to show up.
On the mental side of the game, do you remember when kind of everything kind of switched for you?
You know, honestly, I believe when I came out to Colorado, that was a big, big turning point. Before Minnesota, I just, you know, it didn't even have to be with fighting. I just wasn't mentally happy there, you know, with my surroundings and everything like that. And I came out to Colorado, my team, you know, my coach, Jake Ramos, like just being with my squad has really, really helped give me that mental strength that I've needed, you know. And just, you know, there's places I feel like you just feel right. And this is a place that's what it does to me.
And, of course, we look forward to seeing what that next fight may take place. As always, Brandon, I really appreciate your time. And, of course, as always, let everyone know they can follow you out on social media.
Yeah, check me out at Brandon Gertz MMA on Instagram, Twitter, Brandon Gertz on MMA on Facebook. You know, check me out.
And there is the interview portion of this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which you just heard from Brandon Gertz coming off that win at Bellator 190. And prior to that, you heard Rick Glenn and Marvin Vettori, who fight next weekend at UFC 219. Of course, next weekend on the podcast, myself and Daniel Galvan, we will get into UFC 219. Of course, obviously the top two fights in the fight card are the fights that everyone is interested in, Cyborg and Holm. Actually, I've had a lot of people ask me about that fight and how I think that fight's going to go down. Of course, also Edson Barboza and Khabib Nurmagomedov. Very interested in that one. Of course, that fight is one of those fights that you kind of sit there and say, can Edson Barboza keep it on the feet, or will we see Khabib get the takedown and smash his way on the ground to another victory? And we'll see what's going to happen with the UFC lightweight title. Of course, the other fights are part of that main card will be Jimmy Rivera, John Lineker at 135 pounds. Also, Cynthia Carvillo, Carlos Esparza, and Carlos Condit versus Neil Magny. You heard from Marvin Vettori. He's actually going to be a part of the only fight on UFC Fight Pass, the early prelims, taking on Omari Akhmedov. Currently, will be noted as I'm recording this podcast, the Tim Elliott fight is not listed, so you probably imagine that's probably going to slide into the Fight Pass prelims as well. Rick Glenn, Miles Jury, another fight to definitely pay attention to. Of course, also Lewis Smolka, we had here on the podcast last week, taking on Matthias Nicolai. So that is all coming up next week. UFC 219, as I mentioned, coming on Sunday. If you're around television set, maybe after you do the family thing there on Sunday on Christmas Eve, they will be replaying UFC 218 on Fox on Sunday night. Of course, I'll probably be getting back from Charlotte around that time, so I'll probably sit on the couch and I'll enjoy the replay of UFC 218. Of course, I do appreciate you listening to this podcast. Of course, I really would appreciate if you would go onto Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever you listen to this podcast, leave a rating or review. I really would appreciate if you would do that. Also, if you are interested in being a advertiser here on the MMA Report podcast, just shoot me an email, jason@radioinfluence.com, and we'll get you here as an advertiser on the podcast. So do want to thank Rick Glenn, Marvin Vettori, and Brandon Kurtz all coming on this week's podcast. Of course, the beginning, talking with Daniel Galvan. Always love talking the fight game with Daniel Galvan. So let's go wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which you hear every week on RadioInfluence.com.
This is an Ian Beckles Flava in Your Ear quick fix on Radio Influence.
There's another thing that happened this week that I thought was disgusting and got more disgusting as it went along. Poor little Keaton Jones. Now, Keaton Jones, everybody knows who Keaton Jones is. That's a young kid that was videotaped by his punk-ass hillbilly mother. And the crazy part was his mother put it up there on social media. What's sad about this is the message that Keaton Jones first came up with, I think, is a genuine, authentic message. I think kids are bullying him. I really believe that. And at first, boy, people just opening up, and this guy has the worst life, and we have to help this kid. And celebrities were coming out of the woodwork. The Tennessee Vols, I guess, went to have lunch with him, and everybody was trying to help poor Keaton, whose life is just terrible. Keaton was talking about people pouring milk on his head and shoving ham down his pants. And you got to think of what would make somebody do something so heinous to poor Keaton that, he's an underprivileged, doesn't have any money. He's special. He looks like he's lacking maybe a chromosome here or there. Something's wrong with Keaton. That's for sure. And that's why I'm not attacking Keaton. He's a young kid that's being molded by his scumbag parents. So you got to think of what would make somebody do that to poor Keaton? And then you look at Keaton's parents' social media, and these days you're not going to hide anything in social media with a kid or anybody. If you put something in social media, 5 years ago, somebody's going to dig it up. I'm telling you, somebody's going to dig it up and it's going to be exposed. Keaton Jones's father, who is a very proud white supremacist, not an underground one, a very proud white supremacist. He's in jail, by the way. Before he went to jail, he tweeted out a bunch of stuff and Confederate flags were everywhere, and it was just hate. Keaton's mom, same thing. She has, you know, we have Confederate flags all over the place. So, you know, if a young Ian Beckles is in school, and I'm telling you, I was the kind of guy that befriended some of the special kids. That was me. I hung out with them, had a good rapport with them. Special's fine. Confederate flag and white supremacist, not so fine. Not so fine. Hey, if you don't want your kid to have milk on splashed on them and ham down the pants, don't put them around white supremacist stuff. So all of a sudden, you don't feel as bad about Mr. Keaton who's crying, who's boohoo story. And then you hear stories that Keaton Jones likes the N-word at school. Okay, Keaton, if you roll the N-word off your mouth around me, you're getting a hand down your pants and milk on your head, too. Congratulations.
You can find Ian Beckles' Flavor in Your Ear on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.